many of you are familiar with this, but you may have never connected this passage with this idea. But Jesus predicts Peter's denial, and he says, "Simon, Simon, listen. Satan has demanded to sift all of you like wheat, but I have prayed for you that your own faith may not fail." We have the situation with Jesus where he knows there's been this demand. You can imagine it much like Job. There's been this request made. Let me sift. I'm going to see what they're really made of, all these disciples that follow you. And Jesus' response is not to condemn them, you know, straighten up and fly right because this thing's coming for you. Jesus says, "No, I've prayed for you that you would have the strength to continue what we were discussing in the last episode, Willard, chapter 7, The Divine Conspiracy. The title of the chapter is A Community of Prayerful Love. We talked just now about the role of condemnation as essential to eliminate in a community of prayerful love. We talked about how the so easy practice to condemn is detrimental to being prayerful or loving or having a community. And we outlined a couple ways in which the practice of confession, the practice of community, the practice of being able to bond without the fear of condemnation being in the back of one's head is needed for a good spiritual life. And so we are going to now move on to prayer and what does it mean to pray. And let's jump into the chapter here, sort of wrapping a bow on last week's discussion. And Willard says this, "But once I put away maintaining a sin, but once I back away," he's talking about in our relationships, the dynamic that we should have. "Once I back away, maintaining a sensitive and non-manipulative presence, I am no longer their problem. As I listen, they do not have to protect themselves from me or from my condemnation. And they begin to open up. I may quickly begin to appear to them as a possible ally and a resource. Now they begin to sense their problem to be the situation they have created or possibly themselves, because I am no longer trying to drive them. Genuine communication, real sharing of hearts becomes an attractive possibility. The healing dynamic of the request comes naturally into play." And this is the final illustration, the positive one, of how to really help those near us. And so Willard's point here is that the dynamic drastically changes when we put away our condemnation and our guilt driving, or our guilt is the driving factor for other people, or our damning words to their, maybe their awful behavior. But it is in no way going to modify or make us someone who can stand on their side and be with them.
Yeah, yeah. He says, I think a little bit later than that, as long as I am condemning my friends or relatives or pushing my pearls on them, I am their problem.
Yes.
Right? They have to respond to me, and that usually leads to their judging me right back. Right? This is the counterattack principle we talked about last time. Mm-hmm. Them biting me, Jesus says, right? The pigs turn around and bite because you threw your pearls at their feet. You gave them a good thing and they attacked you for it. And it's because they weren't ready.
And they couldn't
use it. They weren't ready. They couldn't use it. And you threw your pearls at them. You didn't invite them. You didn't request that they take them. So that's the negative that we talked about last week. Now we're going to spend a lot of time focusing on the positive orientation. We're going to talk about the request, the prayer.
Willard uses those almost interchangeably. Mm-hmm. He describes prayer as a request.
Yeah.
But the question that I have and the question you may have is, wait, so how the heck is, what does this look like to request to pray, to do this for somebody in a way that is not condemning. And we see Jesus, I think I'm going to pull it up, Daniel, because I want to read a little bit more than just that verse.
Okay.
While
you're working on that, I'll say one quick thing.
Go ahead.
I'll work a little bit on Willard's definition of prayer. So okay. Prayer is, he says, basically asking or requesting things from God. So the request is when you're issuing it towards people. The prayer is when you're issuing it towards God. Prayer is a matter of explicitly sharing with God my concerns about what he too is concerned about in my life. So it's a mutual concern about something. And we bring this mutual concern, the thing that God and myself are concerned about, to God. And he says, and of course, he is concerned, God is concerned, about my concerns. And in particular, that my concerns should coincide with his.
Mm-hmm.
This is an important point. And this will be important when we talk about prayers not getting answered the way we want them to. My concerns, there's this verse in the Psalms, I wish I could remember it. Lord, give me the desires of my heart. And there are two ways of looking at this, and I haven't looked at the Hebrew, so I'm not laying down an exegesis per se, but the English phrase, give me the desires of my heart, can be legitimately read in two ways. It can be read, God, give me what I want. Or it can be read, God, give me my wants.
Mm-hmm.
Help me want the right things. God is far more concerned that we want the right things than he is concerned with giving us what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And so prayer is a process of reorienting us towards wanting the right things and then requesting those right things from God legitimately.
And we'll talk about this in more detail when we talk about the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah. So Luke, you want to pull up Luke?
Yes. Let's read from Luke. This is 22. This is right before Jesus' execution. Context, yeah, that Willard brings up, and that Jesus models this prayer as request as a non-condemning way to also see what his disciples are made of.
Yeah.
And you could read even I thought of a later scene when they're in the garden and he says, stay awake and pray, stay awake and pray. And what is his request in the garden? If I can, but not your will. And then even his rebuke, you cannot even stay awake now. You keep falling asleep. But it's his request. He's inviting them. Hey, I will need this power that your prayers are going to bring me. I will need the power of this request to get through what I'm going to get through. And he's requested the same for Peter here.
And so, well, and what's super great to realize about this is that this is the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, who has all of the power at his disposal within Christian theology, right? And I think reality, but within the realm of Christian theology, Jesus, second person of the Trinity, he has all of this power at his disposal, and he makes a request instead of being compulsory, instead of compelling Peter. He simply says, I have prayed for you that you would be able to stand. And I think if we should really sit with that, because if Jesus himself isn't going to condemn in order to compel, we shouldn't either. So I'm going to read this quote from Willard on page 266. He says, prayer is never just asking, nor is it merely a matter of asking for what I want. This is kind of what I was alluding to earlier. God is not a cosmic butler or fix-it man, and the aim of the universe is not to fulfill my desires and needs. On the other hand, I am to pray for what concerns me, And many people have found prayer impossible because they thought they should only pray for wonderful but remote needs they actually had little or no interest in ever knowing or even knowledge of. And so there are two things going on in this dynamic. One, we have to recognize that God's desire is for us to want the right things and request the right things. I've talked about that. And the second is just what you were talking about, Luke, this bit about we find prayer difficult because oftentimes we feel as though we can't pray for things that we do want,
mm-hmm.
that are good to want. And so I think we need a twofold prayer, and the Lord's Prayer is good for this. Training us to want the right things,
mm-hmm.
and praying for those things that we want.
Right.
And that twofold prayer can help work through the difficulties I think that we find in approaching prayer. Because the feeling that we have to pray for something abstract and separate from us and holy and untouchable, mm-hmm. is a real deterrent. But also praying that my Old Testament professor used to call it the God of the parking lot, praying that we get the right parking spot,
mm-hmm.
close to the door, you know, that's not exactly what God wants us to want.
Right. So that flows beautifully into this here. And I realized why I couldn't think of it, because it's what you got. It's the James passage. But I'm going to read this short paragraph here. I don't need to bring it on the screen. But Willard says, this is page 259. He says, but what should we do, talking of how we engage with prayer? He says, we should ask. That is the solution to competition and to condemnation. We should turn to God and request what is good rather than only what we want. And that was the line in the chapter that struck me like a spear. We should pray that others succeed. And then he quotes James 4. He says, you do not have because you do not ask, and you do not get when you ask because you only want to feed those pleasures of yours. And then Willard says, this whole approach to life is misguided. You do not have because you do not ask, and you do not get when you ask because you only want to feed those pleasures of yours. And we should turn to God and request what is good rather than only what we want. And I thought, how many times do I pray for what is good for me rather than what I purely want, whether that's some pleasure or something else, or some ease of my burden, when maybe I could pray that I get some things in order because that would be good for me, rather than it just being easier. I'll pray to make more money, but I won't take the opportunity, more responsibility at work because I don't really like that job. But I thought you wanted more money. Oh, but that comes with more responsibility. Oh, but that comes with maybe being in this position you didn't want to be in for a while. Oh, God, I prayed for reunion with this person, with my family member, with my spouse. Why are we fighting all the time? Oh, I thought you wanted a reunion. Well, this is what it's going to take. But you only wanted to pray for what you thought was the good end, what you wanted, but maybe not what was good for that thing. And so that's what I struggle with. I pray for what I want, and only, not only, but many times in my life, not necessarily currently, because of things we'll talk about next week, but I find myself and have found myself very often praying only for what I want and not what is good for me. And many times what I want is just to feed my own pleasures. And why would God want to honor that kind of request? Because it's not usually not going to make me more holy. It's usually not going to lead me to sanctification or some kind of theosis. It's not realigning my mind. It's not realigning my actions. It's not making me a student of Jesus. But yeah, but it's good for me right now. No, it's not. It's just pleasurable. So I found that to be a big, big struggle for me.
Yeah.
When I sit in hardship and think, God, please give me a way out. Please give me this. Please give me that. And then I had to sit and think, I read this and I thought, but man, look, how often do you just pray? You request what is good rather than only what you want. I couldn't think about it until I'd started praying the Lord's Prayer. Now I pray it. And we'll talk about this. I keep saying this. We'll talk about this more later. But like, then all these other branches of what I really need to pray for come out when I pray the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
Then I really start praying. So
let's table that.
I'll stop.
Because you've got a whole rant on that that I love that we'll plug for the next episode.
Yeah. So we'll revisit this.
Yes. Quote. Yeah. But I do love exactly what you said. This idea that we need to make sure that we're praying that our wants be reshaped into his image, not just that we get what we want.
Right. Exactly.
But here, there's another thing here too, right? There's the dynamic that even when we pray for what is good, that prayer is denied.
Yes.
Or even when we pray for what we think is good, maybe you could say. So Willard says on page
I have to say this. I'm not saying that you praying that a loved one of yours like gets healed is purely what you want for pleasure and not a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. No. There is.
But I think all of us know exactly what I mean when I'm like,
yes.
Yeah, but I just pray for what would be nice for me right now. Necessarily what's good for me.
And there's substantial overlap between what you want and what is good for you, I think. But it's when we don't distinguish those two things that I think a lot of the bleed over of them operates in an unhealthy way in our prayer life.
Mm-hmm.
So Willard says, requesting is a way of getting that requests us to go through the freedom of the person asked, with God or with human beings. If I make a request to you, Luke, I have to go through your freedom in order to get it.
Well, I'm not a Calvinist.
Amen. Sorry to all of my Calvinist friends. I do have them. So, and I respect them greatly. I'll even add that. Anyway, we have to go through the freedom. There you go. Okay, sorry. We have to go through the freedom of the person asked. However, in the very act of asking, in the very nature of the request, we acknowledge that the other person can say no.
Right.
And innocent as doves, we accept that response. It's very hard to do when it's from God, and it's very hard to do when it's something important, like our health or the health of the loved one. We are not set to punish him or her, the person, for saying no, or God. I have had very big prayer requests in my life go unanswered. The one that's the easiest to talk about and the most obvious probably for people who know me, I was born with a heart condition. And so the healing or the lack thereof that I've experienced in my life, I have a very close friend who's been miraculously healed multiple times. So for people who don't believe in that, we can have a separate conversation, but I've been up close and personal to it before, but I've never experienced it and I've prayed for it. I've made the request. So this is what you talked earlier about. Why is it that we don't make requests sometimes? For me in the past, it's been because I don't think God's actually going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So why ask?
Right.
And this is a dynamic we can talk about in another episode we have coming too. So I won't say too much, but because that one, there are several others, but because of that one request, that was a big one, was denied. I have somehow got it, not in my head, but in my heart, that God can't or won't answer my prayers. And it took this summer me praying for another really big thing that God answered, that God did give me. And it was a good thing, right? It wasn't just what I wanted. It was good. It was also what I wanted, but it was good. And God answering that prayer, that I realized, no, God has actually answered a lot of my prayers. There's just been a few that he hasn't. And those few that he hasn't have actually been pretty key and formative for me in my life and my spiritual journey. And so I can see, you know, maybe why he hasn't. And so this need to go through the other person's freedom with the request is important because, again, it's not compulsion. Mm-hmm. It's not compulsion through condemnation. It's request through the freedom of the other. And that's important.
And that's the most free relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, I remember when I was in high school, this is going to sound funny. I went to a boarding school. So every time I describe a situation, I was going to, like, my roommate sounds weird to people. But I remember I had a roommate, and beginning of term, we made a deal with each other. And we said, hey, if one of us is doing something and we ask the other person, like, do they want to be involved? Like, hey, I want to show you this thing or want to play this thing or, you know, can you help me with whatever? If you don't want to, you can just say no. And I'm not going to be hurt about it. And that was, and that had to be explicitly stated mm-hmm. in the beginning of our rooming together.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? When I'd ask him, hey man, you want to do this thing? Hey, I want to show you. And he'd say, yes. I knew he actually wanted to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then you have the freedom of, we can actually enjoy this thing we agreed to do together because we know we both want to be participatory in this activity rather yeah. than, oh, well, is he, does he really? I mean, he kind of looks kind of bored. I showed him, like, I'm really interested in this thing. I'm trying to show him this. And it doesn't look like he really, so like, is he really my friend? Like, is he just rooming with me out of obligation? What's going on? No. He said, we made a deal. And he said, yes, he wanted to watch it. So we're both participating. And when he says no, okay, that's the deal we made. Maybe later I'll say the same thing. He wanted to do it. Or, you know, same thing with him. And so that, but again, if you want to try that with your friends, go ahead and try it. But you, depending on how you know them, you got to explicitly state that a lot of times because
yeah.
we have this, again, this reaction to how people take us and maybe their rejection is a condemnation of that thing that we want to participate with and with them or show them.
Or a condemnation of us. You know, I think a lot of times in social dynamics, we do this dance where we're just trying to not offend the other person or hurt their feelings, mm-hmm. but no one's being honest.
Yes.
And in this dance, more feelings end up getting hurt because everything is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're open and you're honest, if you bring into the light what has been left in the dark, then the relationship can grow and flourish honestly. And I have found that being explicit with people about your expectations of them, their expectations of you, in any and every situation is almost always better than the subtle behind the back.
Right.
Or the, I just don't want to hurt their feelings kind of thing. In the long run, right? It might be a bumpy road for a little bit, in all right. honesty, because people aren't used to that. But making a request as opposed to manipulating or condemning
mm-hmm.
is so much more freeing. And then once you build a reputation of that in your relationships, people know what to expect of
because
you.
Then your yes really means yes and your no really means no.
It's almost like Jesus was saying something cohesive here.
because then you weren't saying, "Oh, I promise next time, man. Next time you want to go play basketball, we'll play basketball, but not right now. But I promise you, bro, we'll hoop next at, you know, late studio or whatever it is, right? Or, you know, next Saturday, whatever." And it's like, you know, he says that, but it's not really going to happen. Because you know your flaky friends, too. You know the friend that's like, "Oh, yeah, that sounds great." And they text you, "Sorry, man, this thing." And you're like, "I asked him," thinking, knowing that his yes really didn't mean yes. And his no really didn't mean no. So, you know, but this is the dynamic in the prayer and in our interpersonal lives. And we have to go, the point was, we have to go through their free will. So I am totally giving my friend in that scenario the free will to reject my request.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be any other way with the King of the Universe.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that Willard's doing this entire chapter. I'll say this and then we'll move on to our last point.
Mm-hmm.
But what's true of God is true of what's true of our relationship with humans is true of our relationship with God in many ways, right? It's just a microcosm, macrocosm. We're not equals with God, right? We're equals with humans. But there's a reason that two greatest commandments are love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. It's because those dynamics are very similar. And when you get one right, you get the other right, and they can help reciprocate. So what's true of our relationships with God is true of our relationships with people. And that's why Willard's request in prayer, we request with people and we pray to God, but the dynamics work so, so well together. And so I think that's what you and I have both been expressing over this last little bit. So mm-hmm. I'm going to read now our closing quote for the day. This is from towards the end of Willard's this section of the chapter in chapter 7 in The Divine Conspiracy. He says, "Prayer as kingdom praying is an arrangement explicitly instituted by God in order that we as individuals may count and count for much as we learn step by step how to govern, to reign with him in his kingdom, to enter and to learn this reign is what gives individual life its intended significance. The high calling also explains why prayer frequently requires much effort, continuous effort, and on some matters, possibly years and years of effort. Prayer is, above all, a means of forming character. It combines freedom with power, freedom and power with service and love. What God gets out of our lives, and indeed what we get out of our lives, is simply the person we become. It is God's intention that we should grow into the kind of person he could empower to do what we want to do. Give us the desires of our heart in both senses. Then we are ready to reign forever and ever." Revelation, that's a reference to Revelation 22:5, where the saints reign with God. Willard's point is that
just call it theosis, man.
Yeah, yeah. If we're going to reign with God, if we're going to be kingdom builders, if we're going to live into this gospel call as we established at the outset of this study of the Divine Conspiracy, if we're going to do all of that, prayer is one of the primary vehicles through which we are invited to, with freedom and power, with service and love, operate in the world. And let the kingdoms that God has given us to reign here and now become his kingdoms, not just our own. That we can become the kinds of persons that he could empower to do what we want to do, Let our natural desires be that of his kingdom. So prayer is primarily requesting from him, and in that request, we are transformed. Our character is changed into his image. That's the beautiful vision of prayer that Willard offers. Luke, you have anything to say? I see you're looking for something.
Okay. I can't stop thinking about this bit as I've been meditating on this chapter. So I know I've read this before. I'm going to read it again. It's the final paragraph in The Weight of Glory.
Yeah, please.
We'll try and make it. He says, meanwhile, the cross comes before the crown, and tomorrow is a Monday morning. A cleft has opened in the pitless walls of the world, and we are invited to follow our great captain inside. The following hymn is, of course, the essential point. That truly being so, it may be asked what practical use there is in this speculation which I have been indulging. I can think of at least one such use. It may be possible for each of us to think too much of his own potential glory hereafter. It is hardly possible for him to think too often or too deeply about that of his neighbor. The load or weight or burden of my neighbor's glory should be laid daily on my back, a load so heavy that only humility can carry it. And the backs of the proud will be broken. It is a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are in some degree helping each other to one or other of these destinations. It is in the light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and the circumspection proper to them, that we should conduct all our dealings with one another, all friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal, and their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But as immortals with whom we joke, work, marry, snub, and exploit, immortal horrors or everlasting splendors, this does not mean that we are to be perpetually solemn. We must play. But our merriment must be of that kind, and it is, in fact, the merriest kind which exists between two people who have, from the outset, taken each other seriously. No flippancy, no superiority, no presumption. And our charity must be a real and costly love, with deep feeling for their sins, in spite of which we love the sinner with no condemnation, no mere tolerance or indulgence which parodies love as flippancy, parodies merriment. Next to the Blessed Sacrament itself, your neighbor is the holiest object present to your senses. If he is your Christian neighbor, he is holy in almost the same way, for in him also Christ, the glorifier and the glorified, God himself, is truly hidden.
And this is exactly what we've been talking about, right? Is this dynamic that the so great importance of not condemning, but requesting. Because condemnation pushes that person that could be an horror or a splendor in one of those two directions.
And it doesn't give them the weight of glory he is describing.
You treat them as far lower beings than they deserve. With flippancy, as he says.
I find in almost every interaction, if I stop and ponder what that person may be like in 1,000 years, my attitude changes very drastically.
Yeah.
So we'll talk next about how practicing the Lord's Prayer can bring us into this kind of mind and headspace.
Yeah. So until next time.
Alrighty. We'll see you then.